This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And I do want to apologize for starting a little later tonight. I think we're about 5 or 10 minutes late. We had a little minor catastrophe with my guest, Nancy Talbot. So it's okay, Nancy. I'm going to tattle on you.
I'm sorry. I really am, Dolores. My hair was soaking wet, and I, like an idiot, I didn't look at my schedule this morning. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine, but she forgot, and you know, I bet other people forget. There's nothing wrong with that. We're all human. But she said she was standing there with a wet head, so to give her a few minutes to at least wrap a towel around your head so you can do the show. So that's why we had to call her back. So it's okay. We always wing it anyway.
Yeah, well, life is pretty much like that, isn't it, Dolores?
Oh, yeah, we have to. It seems like, you know, when we both travel so much, too, and you can't get upset when you're stuck in airports and all it delayed and things. You just have to roll with the punches. About all you can do. Now, Seth is the one who connected us. He said he had some questions about last week, and he, you know, wanted to know if it'd be okay if he jumps in. And I said, sure.
He
wants to ask you to clarify some of the things you were talking about last week.
Fine, I'd love to.
Well, but let me first fill people in on what we were doing in case they didn't hear the show last week. All right, I had Nancy Talbot on last week, and she is, I still call you an expert on the crop circles. She denies she's an expert, but I think she is. And
now, the reason I deny it, Dolores, is that there's always somebody who knows more. And all that does is set you up for somebody to, you know, they think you think you're hot stuff, and I know better.
Yeah, I know what you mean. They want to knock you down. But still, you know a lot more than most people out there and most experts out there, scientists.
Well, I've been looking at it for a long time.
Yeah, Nancy works with scientists who really know what they're doing, and she was giving us a tremendous amount of scientific information last week. And but then we began to get into some very exciting things, and I was watching the clock, and I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to have to tell her to stop, because if I don't, on this show, they do pull the plug, because the next host comes right behind.
Well, we can get to a lot of that stuff this time.
That's what I want to do. I want to make sure that we do get back into that.
Well, let's get to these questions first. I can probably take care of them pretty quickly, and then jump right into the other stuff.
Okay, let me give out the toll-free number first, in case anybody else wants to call in. The number is 877-876-5227, 877-876-5227. Okay, Seth, are you listening there? Okay, and we said we have a caller already.
Well, let's hear from them.
Okay, who is there?
From Asheville, North Carolina. Thanks for taking my call.
I can't understand you. What?
It's Jason.
Jason, you have a question for Nancy.
Yes, I had a question for Nancy.
Okay, just speak up a little bit, Jason, so we can hear you.
Okay. My question was if do you have any evidence to support the UFOs are from Atlantis?
I don't personally have any background in that, although tonight we are going to talk about a couple of cases that involve UFOs apparently associated with crop circles. But I'm afraid I don't have much knowledge about the Atlantis thing. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've covered it in my books, but we're not going to be talking about my stuff tonight. We're going to focus on Nancy. So the subject tonight is the crop circles, Jason. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right. Maybe you can call back then when I'm doing a show by myself one night.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Jason.
Hey, great show.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right. Thank you. All right, Seth.
I guess that's as good a place as any to start, Dolores, with these, you know, this growing apparent evidence that UFOs, whatever they are,
yeah,
are at least in some cases associated with some crop circles.
Yeah, I've heard some of the evidence, but I don't know if there is a firm conviction because...
Well, I've got one case that is as solid as I can imagine.
Okay.
And I'm going to talk about that. For people who have a web, you know, have a computer, if they go to the BLT website, which is www.blt, just like the sandwich, bltresearch.com, on the update section there, you'll see a listing for a UFO involvement in a case in Poland. It's in the updates on that list there.
In Poland?
In Poland.
Okay.
Now, I've been to Poland a couple of times originally for the crop circle situation. That was what I was interested in.
Yeah.
But this is happening now more and more that I go to a place or get involved in a case because of a crop circle and then start to hear all sorts of other things, a lot of which will center around UFOs being in some way associated. And it's been happening so much in the last 10 years that I have had to change my opinion. At first I thought that there was absolutely no correlation between UFOs and crop circles, but I can't really say that anymore. This particular case occurred back in 2003, in August.
Yeah.
And there was a local man, this is in northern Poland, in a town, actually I think the town he was in was it's called Police, of all things. And he's a truck driver. His name is Lech Chazinski, a local. And he was driving to work one morning very early, knowing nothing about crop circles, had never heard of crop circles, and I don't think knew anything much about UFOs either. And this was apparently just around dawn, just as dawn was breaking. And along this road, which was pretty deserted at that time, he saw three, what he thought were men, and at first, in fact, he thought they were cosmonauts, because they were dressed in funny suits, you know?
Yeah.
And they were on the road in front of his car, you know, say a quarter of a mile ahead. So he started to slow down so as not to hit them, and he was thinking, well, maybe they're Russian, you know, astronauts who have had an accident or something and need some help. And as the car came up close and stopped, he began to realize that, no, these were not cosmonauts. It was something else. They came toward him, keeping a triangular configuration between the three of them, one at the front and the other two behind in sort of an isosceles triangle.
Yeah.
And the one in front was the only one that he really communicated with. But they stood in this triangular configuration relative to each other the entire time that, you know, this was going on. The one in front was very close, just outside the driver's window, and by now he had realized that this absolutely was not, these weren't people. He didn't know what it was, but he was getting scared. He said that they had on suits that looked, you know, like a spacesuit would look like, with a funny box on the chest that had colored lights kind of going up and down in a display.
Okay.
Some kind of gear on their head, a helmet-type thing with a couple of lights. All he could see through the eyepiece were two round eyes, big black round eyes, he said, not almond-shaped as we often hear. These were round. And as he started to realize they weren't people and started to get scared, a beam of light shot out from this leader, he called it the leader's helmet, and he apparently went unconscious for just a moment.
Uh-huh.
When he came to, he was feeling a lot calmer. He was hearing in his mind, you know, to be calm, to relax. Things were okay. He didn't have to be scared. And he also got this impression that they were asking him to get out of the car, which he didn't want to do, but felt like he felt impelled, I guess, to do so.
Yeah.
So the car was stopped now, you know, and in gear. And so he got out. And they then, there were questions back and forth between him and this one that were apparently all carried out telepathically. And they expressed an interest in, first of all, the car, of all things, wanted to know how the car ran, you know, what made it go, essentially.
Yeah.
And he tried to explain an engine, and then they wanted to know what kind of fuel, and he tried to explain gas and all that, you know. Then they showed an interest in his leather belt, his shoes, which were made of leather, and wanted to know what material it was, which it took him a while to try to get across, which he did. And this took 15, 20 minutes, this kind of questioning about absolutely mundane things.
Yeah.
It was starting to now be quite light. He then got a very clear telepathic impression that they were telling him that the reason they were here on Earth was to tell local people, I mean humans, about the environmental troubles. You know, that the Earth was in serious trouble because of pollution of the air and the water and the land.
Yep.
And that if people did not take this seriously quickly, that there would be catastrophic results.
Yeah, I hear this a lot in my work.
Yes, I know. You hear it all the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, nothing specific. They didn't tell him what catastrophic results, just he got the impression that was what they were trying to say.
Yeah.
And that they thought it was very important that he now tell as many people as he possibly could about this. They kind of charged him with doing that. And he took it very seriously. By now, he was calm. He was kind of awestruck by the whole thing. But he took their message very seriously and since then has been doing his best to try to tell people, people who listen to him. Well, this seemed now to be the end of this communication, and he said that they then turned around and rose up in the air over the road and kind of floated across this big field, which was right next to the road, some 10 feet or so above the ground, and went up across this field to a slight hillside, where for the first time he realized there was a UFO sitting there right in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if people are on the website, they will see that he has drawn, I have a photograph of him first just so people can see his face. Then there's a photograph of him at the road site doing a TV interview because the TV people wanted to hear about it. And then he did a drawing for me of one of these creatures. And it shows simply a basic human form with a suit that pretty much covers everything, a mitten-like hands, some sort of boots on the feet, this strange rectangular device with colored lights on the front, and this thing on the helmet. And he said he's not much of an artist, but he drew it as well as he could. As he was watching them, they floated directly under this UFO, and he drew a picture also of what the UFO looked like. And it's kind of a nuts and bolts 1950s-style UFO, if you will.
Okay, all right.
You know, two plates or saucers kind of stuck together. The only difference was, he said there was a cupola, some sort of a thing on the very top, and two antennas sticking up. And then it had kind of girder-like, like Tinker Toy-type legs that came down from three different places. So it was balanced on three triangular, Tinker Toy-type legs.
Okay.
And they floated right underneath the thing, and when they got directly underneath it, because it was up off the ground a ways, a beam of light shot out from underneath the craft. They were drawn up into the craft, apparently, in the light. Then these legs retracted. The thing rose a little bit, and he said a white mist, a foggy mist, encompassed the whole UFO for several seconds. And then all of a sudden, it shot off across the field and was gone.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by now, you see, it was broad daylight. It was bright light. And where that UFO had been, he could clearly see a crop circle.
Okay.
Which he, of course, had never heard of before. We have a lot of photographs of this crop circle in the report that's on the BLT website. And what you see is a large center circle with what looked like either three or six smaller circles around at various, in a triangular formation around that center circle.
But do you think those were from the lakes?
Well, we've been trying to figure this out because he guessed the size of the UFO, and from his estimate, the UFO would have been much larger than the actual crop circle.
Okay.
Now, if the legs came down directly underneath, it's conceivable that they could have caused these smaller circles. But if so, the entire UFO would have extended way beyond the borders of the crop circle itself. And he wasn't positive about the... I've got the dimensions written down here somewhere.
If the other one was smaller, the main circle, that could have come from the exhaust or the emissions.
Well, who knows? And he wasn't even sure. In fact, I have it written here. We figured out from some of the photos that he sent that the crop circle itself, that center circle, was about 20 meters in diameter.
Yeah.
His estimate of the UFO was that it was much larger.
Okay.
And when we went into, well, we didn't, I didn't, but when people then went into this impression in the field, we discovered, and the photographs clearly show, that the plants are all swirled around exactly like they are in crop circle after crop circle everywhere in the world.
Uh-huh.
There was no burning of anything. This whole thing did happen near one of these high tension, these great big high tension electric, you know, lines. And we find all the time that crop circles occur near these high power electric lines.
Okay.
And so does this one.
But, you
and
know,
he wasn't positive that the UFO was actually landed. He simply doesn't know whether those feet were touching the ground. It looked like they were.
Yeah.
But he's not positive of that.
Uh-huh.
So we don't know whether the feet of the thing and something underneath it actually made the crop circle. I think the UFO in this case must be directly involved in the creation of that crop circle. But
yeah.
How is anybody's guess?
But, you know, I've investigated some, though, where there were circles that were burnt.
Well, sometimes people see what they think is burning.
Yeah.
And often we have tested plants which were taken from events. I remember one in Canada. It's on the website, too. And what we have found regularly is that in every case so far where we have thought it was burning, it is not. It is an opportunistic mold known as Euthalago, which immediately colonizes anytime there's any destruction to a plant, the moisture inside that plant.
Oh, okay.
Is sweet, and this mold will attack it, and it becomes it can become very black in time.
Okay, because I have taken samples from inside of a circle that appeared to be burnt, and from the outside, and you know we've sent them off to see if there was any difference in them.
Well, what you would have to find if it was burned, you would find evidence carbon blackening.
Okay.
What in fact we have found in every case where we've done this. In a crop circle. Now, I'm not talking about UFO trace cases. I'm talking about crop circles here.
Okay.
In the crop circle situation, it has always been Euthalago. Even when it was quite dark and looked just as burned as it could be, it was not carbon.
Okay, because like with us, we thought it was probably burned from the exhaust.
Well, you wouldn't know now testing it. And if you do test it, if it's burning, you're going to find some carbon.
Yeah.
So far, we haven't. Now, I think in some UFO trace cases where people have seen a UFO landed in a field or sitting in a field or whatever, or hovering over, and they subsequently find some sort of an area underneath it that's affected, in some of those cases, it may very well be burning. But that's not what I'm talking about here. In this case,
yeah, that sounds different.
It is different. Although some of these circular impressions that seem to be directly related to UFOs also do look like crop circles. It really depends on the way the plants are laid over, how they're swirled, and how they're affected. And there are not very many trace cases which are reported quickly enough to to get people there to do the proper testing, you know?
Yeah, the ones I've investigated was, but done, you know, days or later, you know, it was a long time afterwards. That makes a difference.
Well, used to Lego, the longer it goes, the darker it gets. So you can't assume just because it's blackened that it is burned.
Okay.
It may be, it may not be.
Let's see, is Seth, are you there? Seth?
Does he listen? I don't know if he can hear or not.
Well, I thought they were listening. If they are, Seth, if you're there, I wanted you to go ahead and ask your question before it got too far into the show. Seth? Yeah, go ahead and ask the question.
All right, we got Seth on the air now? I don't know if he can be on while we're on. It appears that he can't.
Well, I thought he could be. I've done it before. Oh, well.
Right.
He had a question dealing with the crystallization you talked about in the scientists, but I didn't get the whole question. I guess we're just going to have to let it go. Okay. But,
Well, now, another thing that's interesting, people are, you know, you hear regularly about light phenomena associated with the crop circles.
Yeah.
And it's true that there are various kinds of light phenomena, sometimes very small, little tennis ball-sized lights, sometimes a little bit bigger, like maybe baseball-sized, sometimes soccer ball-sized, and a variety of colors.
I've seen the videos that people have taken of these little lights in the circles.
Yes. Well, they almost always have been seen after the crop circle has formed, and people are there videotaping it, you know?
Yeah.
There are, however, a number of verified cases where witnesses have observed a ball of light, and there are various colors and various shapes, actually, apparently, directly causing a crop circle. In particular, this young man in Holland, whom I visit regularly, Robert Vandenbroeke.
Can you hear me now?
The one you were talking about last week when we
Yes. Well, Robert has witnessed, maybe 10, 15 of these things now, crop circles occurring with a light phenomena directly, immediately associated.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, now we can hear you, Seth.
Hi there.
Hi there. Can you ask your question, whatever it was?
Well, sure thing, and I feel bad. I hope you haven't answered this last week.
You were wanting to know about the crystallization from last week, scientist?
Yes, you were talking about you took the samples of the crystalline clay to a
We took soils from inside the crop circle and soils from outside, and we extracted the clays from those soils.
And you had like a 99% plus correlation rate?
All right, I'll go over that again. What we found was a change in the crystalline structure of the clay minerals in the crop circle soils that was greater than the crystallization in the control soils. That finding correlated at the 99.2% level of confidence with the changes in the plants, which were sampled at the same location. The problem being that the plant changes that we talked about last week, are caused, we think, by microwave radiation, very quick, very fast bursts that heat up the moisture inside the plant stem, causing the node elongation as the steam tries to escape, etc. The change in the clay minerals, however, takes a great deal more energy. We figured something in the range of 600 to 800 degrees Celsius for a period of hours. Now, that sort of heat would have obviously burned up the plants. And yet, in this case, the plants were fine. They were not burned up. And so the problem is, how in the world do you account for the changes in the plants, which did exist, because we did all the work and they were, the plant changes were there, and at exactly the same sampling locations inside the formation, the soils were affected in this much more severe way. You see, the problem is, we don't know, or modern science doesn't know, of any energy which could affect selectively the plants in one way and the soils in another.
Okay, Seth, did you have a question dealing with that part?
Sort of. When assuming for the moment, just talking about the plants, is the entire plant affected, or is it just the base and the tip?
Well, we don't know. I mean, we only know what we know. There are many, many things you could look at in the plants. And, you know, our people do what they can do. What we know is that we get elongated nodes, we get expulsion cavities, these holes blown out. Both of those physical changes to the plants are related to exposure to microwave radiation very quickly, very intense and very quick. It turns the moisture inside the stems to steam. The steam has to get out. At the top of the plant, the tissues are very elastic. They stretch. And so when the water turns to steam there, it simply seeps out and stretches the node. Farther down the plant stem, the fibers are not so elastic. They're quite tough. And the steam builds up, and it can't get out. So what it does is it blows a hole. Now, again, what causes that whole thing is an extremely brief, a nanosecond burst of intense microwaves.
Okay, and that occurs throughout the entire plant, the expulsion holes.
Yeah, well, they in the first years when we first started doing this, we would see expulsion cavities mostly in the second node down. But in that particular, in the case, the study case, and since then, we are finding expulsion cavities all the way down the plant stem. Right now, a week ago, we had another crop circle reported here in Washington State, up near Grand Coulee Dam. And in that formation, we found not only the elongated apical node, that top node, we also found expulsion cavities all over the place. Not just in the second node, but in the third nodes also.
Would that be indicative of more of the moisture in the plant flashing to steam?
Correct. When the plants are younger and greener, of course they have more moisture in them. So the amount of moisture in the plant stem has something to do with what kind of results you get. But also, we believe that the intensity level of waves from case to case, that the microwave component of this energy system is not exactly the same in every instance.
Okay.
Does that help?
It does. Have you considered something? Is the microwave, have you been able to tell if it's directional, if it comes from the bottom, from the crop circle, from the soil itself, or from above?
It appears to us, again, I don't think anybody can say this 100%, but all of our work seems to indicate that the microwaves are coming from above.
Okay. Okay, is that okay, Seth? Did that answer everything?
Yes, that's fantastic. Thank you very much. And I guess the one question I meant to ask when I started, you took it to a specialist, the soil samples. Has he done anything?
I'm sorry, what are you talking about? Which soils? We've been looking at soils for 10 years.
The scientist, that last scientist that you were sent the things off to.
The X-ray diffraction work was done by a material science scientist and a geologist on the West Coast, and then the work was repeated by Dr. Robert C. Reynolds, Jr., who was head of the Department of Earth Sciences at Dartmouth College, and he got exactly the same results that the man we'd hired got. So we had very firm confirmation that the increased crystalline structure did exist, even though the geologist at Dartmouth said it was impossible because it never, ever happens in surface soil. It's caused usually by geologic pressure where you have mountains pressing down on sediments over thousands of years.
Well,
that's
how have
the
these
normal
findings,
way that change occurs.
How have these findings affected these people? Now they've said they found it.
It made them very interested in the crop circle phenomenon.
It's something they can't explain with their what they know then.
You know, when a good scientist runs into something in their particular field, which they accept is a fact, you know, this guy did the work himself and he accepted that it was correct, the work was right, then of course it has to challenge their thinking. And the good scientists respond with intense curiosity.
Okay. Because a lot of them would just throw it out and say, no, it doesn't go along with what I believe, and they feel too challenged. They wouldn't want to do it.
Well, I would think any scientist who was like that would not be really the caliber of people that we like to work with.
Okay.
What I have found so far is that in every instance of the work that we're doing, because we've worked on some UFO cases, we were the people who identified the bovine hemoglobin at the cattle mutilation cases, and in every single one of these things, when the result is checked and double-checked by competent scientists, their response is to become very interested. The problem, the reason why you don't see many credentialed scientists doing this kind of work is there is no money, you see, to pay them to do the work.
Yeah, they have to be paid for the research.
Well, they have to live just like you and I. They have rent to pay and everything else. And if there's no money, then they have to do it only in their free time. And most really competent scientists are very busy people, you know.
Oh, yeah. Seth, I want to get back to with Nancy with something we had to end with last week, and I want to make sure we have plenty of time to finish.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I'll let you go. Thank you very much, Nancy.
You're welcome.
But Nancy, when we were going off the air last week, we got into something very interesting. You were talking about this young man in Holland that you're working with and how you were at his house, I believe, when you said you heard the noises outside with the cattle.
Yes, when we saw the first time. He had seen any number of crop circles form before that year. That was 2001. But that's the first one I ever saw happen.
Let's go over that again, because I felt like I was rushing you in, but we had to go off the air, where you saw the columns of light come down and everything.
Okay, I'll tell you about I've seen two of them occur now, and I'll tell you that one first and then the second one.
Okay,
In that first one, it was 2001, and he and I had been out in the fields for weeks with geomagnetometers and electromagnetometers. I was trying to find... Well, I was looking for some kind of difference in the ground in these areas or in the air that might explain why the crop circles were occurring there.
Yeah.
And we had spent literally 2 weeks, 3 weeks lugging all this equipment. It's heavy. It was hot. I was very cross. We weren't getting any changes. I mean, the only time I'd get any spike on any of these meters was when we were standing directly under high tension lines, which, of course, you would expect.
Yeah.
So I was pretty disgusted. I felt like I'd spent 3 weeks of a lot of work and really hadn't gotten anything. And this was toward the end of my stay, and we were in the kitchen one night quite late. We'd been out all day. He wanted to go back out because he gets amazing photographs in these crop circles at night, and he loves to do that. So he wanted to go back out, and he asked if we were going to go, and I was so annoyed. And I was tired, and I said, you know, I'm tired of this phenomenon. I am tired of trying to do this work. It's too hard. It's too, you know, why in the hell can't this phenomenon be more direct? I'm going to bed.
Now you're ready to throw up your hands and quit.
Yes, I was disgusted. So I went upstairs, and the bedroom I was sleeping in is at the back of the house with these floor-to-ceiling glass doors that go out onto a small balcony. And it overlooks their little backyard and then this farm field where crop circles occur all the time out there. And I had gotten into bed, had the windows, the doors wide open, and I was reading for a while before I went to sleep. It was probably around 3:15, I think, by then. And I heard the cattle down the road. There's a farm right nearby. And I honestly had not ever known there were cattle there. I'd been there many times and never heard these cattle before. But I heard the cattle start to bellow, which they do. Not just cattle, but horses will do this, dogs and cats. You got a lot of noise from animals if one of these things is getting ready to happen, apparently.
Yeah.
Somehow the animals sense it. And I heard them start to bellow, and I thought to myself, I'm like, man, maybe something's getting ready to happen here. But I was real tired, and I didn't get up. I thought, well, I should get up and stand on this window. I'll get to see everything. But I didn't. I kept on reading. And the cattle became quiet for a while. And then maybe 10 minutes elapsed, and they started again. And the second time, they were bellowing almost as if they were being stuck with something. They were very not happy. And I knew something was getting ready to happen, and I thought, okay, I'll get up and go stand in these doors, and I'll get to see it.
Yeah.
And before I could get out of the bed, suddenly this brilliant tube of light, about a foot and a half in diameter from my vantage point, came screaming down from the sky right in front of these windows and lit up my room like I had a spotlight on it, lit up the field. I could see it's a quarter, half a mile across that field. I could see it clear as day. It was just as startling as it could be. No noise, no smell, no electromagnetic. The hair on my arms didn't stand up, none of that. Just this very forceful and brilliant light. It lasted only for a second or two, and then it stopped. And it was almost as if, you know, you kind of wondered, did you really see that? And before I could think about it, whoop, here comes another one. And apparently the same, it looked to me to be in the same location. By this time, my feet were on the floor, and I'm starting to wonder if Robert downstairs is seeing this, because his windows in the kitchen face out in the same direction. Well, before I actually could get fully out of bed, a third tube of light came crashing down. Robert was running up the stairs yelling because he'd been watching it from downstairs. And we went immediately to these floor-to-ceiling glass doors and looked up to see, you know, where this was all coming from. And there was absolutely nothing that was visible up there. I mean, what we saw was what looked like a normal sky with a few little wispy clouds and a couple stars here and there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, absolutely nothing. So then we've been yelling so loud, the whole family was up, and we went downstairs to, we're going to go out and see what had happened in the field. And both of us, we were standing at the back door with his parents and his sisters, and I was afraid to step out. I wasn't about to have one of those things hit me.
I don't know if it's coming again or not.
I had no idea, of course.
Yeah.
Robert's younger, and he's braver. He eventually stepped down. I'd say 30 seconds, a minute maybe. He stepped down. He didn't get zapped, so I thought, okay. I grabbed a flashlight, and we went to the end of his little garden, which is about 90 feet from the end of the house, and I took the flashlight and shone it over this fence into the field, which was planted in string beans. And there, right over the fence, as close as you could get to where my, you know, where I was, here is this crop circle with a steam still rising from the crop.
Uh-huh.
I mean, yeah, dew, you know, very heavy dew in Holland, actually, at night. We could see that it was, I mean, all the part we could see right that night was a big ellipse. It turned out that this was an ellipse with a long pathway going off on the northern side and a crossbar like the capital letter T. Which we found next morning when we actually went into it.
Yeah.
The string beans were fully formed at this time. They were bushy little plants, all laid over and swirled around exactly like you see in crop circle after crop circle, although I've never seen one in beans before or since.
I've never heard of one in beans.
Well, they happen in beans, and they happen in carrots and potatoes and every other thing.
I thought mostly it was just grain.
No, well, that's what you see mostly in England, but they happen in almost anything.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, there it was. Now, I mean, it was in exactly the location where we had seen these tubes of light come down.
Mm.
We had been in that field earlier that night with some of this equipment. There was nothing in that field then. As far as I can tell, those beams of light were directly related to the making of that crop circle. Now, last October, I was back in Holland again, and Robert and I were out, not in that place, but in another area where we go a lot, just out in the fields at night, and we were getting all kinds of anomalous photos. Again, for people with the Internet, if they go to the website, bltresearch.com, click on updates and look at some of those reports, both the Holland reports and one at Col de Vence, France. And you will see these amazing light anomaly photos that Robert and I and a lot of other people are getting, but some of these are very dramatic.
Mm.
And in this particular case, last October, I had been in Europe, I'd been in Italy and France and Poland, and in every single place I'd been that year, I was getting a new kind of anomaly, something I'd never seen before. Big pink, pinky purple light bulbs, big ones, and lots of them. And it started in France, and then everywhere else I went, I was getting them. Well, when I got to Holland, Robert started to get them, too. I mean, both of us were using these, you know, different cameras, and he was getting them, and I was getting them. And we were getting them in one particular area. So we were going back there several nights in a row. And the third or fourth night, suddenly he grabbed my arm. We were on a little dike up above these fields. And he grabbed my arm, and he pointed, you know, off in the corner of this field. And he says, "There, there, do you see? Look, look." I couldn't see a bloody thing. It was quite dark. There's nothing out there. There's no houses nearby. There are no streetlights, nothing. And then I saw a spiraling movement. Well, he was describing, he was watching this, and what he saw was a dark spiral going down into the ground in this field, and it wasn't more than 30 feet in front of us. So the two of us immediately went down this little causeway into the field itself. We were in the circle within 10 seconds of when it had happened. And in this case, there was no light phenomena that occurred as the circle did. It was very gentle. There was none of this forcefulness that we had seen in the one in 2001. And there was a beautiful little circle with, I think there were four circles outside it, around it, in grass that time. And you could tell when your feet got to it because it was smoother than the rest of the field. And both of us, we started to get this tingling in our legs, which often happens when you're in a brand new crop circle.
And that was brand new. It just happened.
Well, I mean, 10 seconds. I mean, it wasn't more than 10 or 15 seconds and we were in it.
Yeah.
Now, we went back to that field many times over the next several days, and started to get even more stunning light anomalies than we'd gotten before. And I think it was the last night we went back just to say goodbye to the field. And I was getting not only these pinky purple things, and Robert getting them also, but I started to get these big orangey-colored light bulbs, big ones, down in the circle area. I mean, I must have gotten 100 of these. And after a while, we got kind of tired, and we were going to go home, so we walked up this little causeway to where the car was, and I was taking pictures the whole time. And if you look at this report on the website, you'll see that these two orange balls, along with a whole bunch of pink-purple ones, followed us right up out of the field. We got into the car, and I rolled the window down because I thought they were still there. You couldn't see them with your eyes. They were only happening on the camera.
Okay, you couldn't see them with the eyes.
No, not with our eyes this time. And there they were right outside the car. I took another three or four shots while I was sitting in the driver's seat. And we were just real tired by then, and so we went home.
So the cat was able to pick up what you couldn't see.
Often. Sometimes we see these things. Sometimes we see them with our eyes. Most often we don't. They just appear on the camera. But I have gotten them for years on film as well as on digital. I never even used a digital camera until the last year or so.
Yeah.
And I have dozens and dozens and dozens of these things on film every bit as easily as I get them on the digital camera. And Robert gets them. He must have. I did last year get a chance to look at this archive his father has been keeping for the last 15 years. And there have got to be somewhere between 10 and 12,000
wow.
of these light phenomena photos. And I'm not talking little light bulbs. I'm talking every kind of weird light anomaly you can imagine or have ever seen. I'm putting together a new story for the website about some of that, and we'll be putting some of it up pretty soon. But it's just this huge range of anomalies, and it doesn't make any difference what camera you use. It simply matters whether or not these energies are present, and he can usually tell when they are, and then you get them, and I get them as good as easily as he gets them now.
Okay, Nancy, I'm watching the clock again, but I'd like to hear from some of these skeptics how they can deny some of this stuff.
Well, they couldn't if if in fact they paid attention to the details.
Yeah.
And looked at anything like the volume. But you see, it hasn't been made public. Robert's parents are very protective.
Yeah.
And they for a long time, they wouldn't allow any of this information to be made public. And I don't even know how you could make this whole archive available now. My God, it would cost a fortune.
Oh, would that be too much?
You know, to put it on a computer. But
yeah.
I've seen it. And I get them enough myself to know that it's not just light phenomena. Robert has become a healer. He is called a medium now in Holland, and people come to him for all kinds of advice and help.
Yeah.
One of the things that he's doing now that I've never heard anywhere, and I saw it myself in Holland with him last October, he can see people who have died.
Yeah.
When a client comes to him, if they've lost someone and they're upset about it, he will see these people with his eyes around the client.
Mm-hmm.
And he can take photographs of the deceased people, which he then gives to the clients.
Ah.
And they will tell him, yes, that's Aunt Susie or Uncle Joe or whatever.
And I think this is where we were last week when we had to stop, but we are going to have to stop again. Nancy, I'm probably going to have you come back on again in the future because you're just a wealth of information. But you want to give out your website one more time if people want to check in with you.
Okay, it's bltresearch.com. And I advise people, I mean, a lot of the stuff that's on the website is the scientific research on
uh-huh.
the crop circle plants and soils. But the section that has a lot of these other reports is called Eyewitness Reports.
Okay.
And I always list the most recent ones in the update section, and you can just click right there and then link to the report.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to sign off now, but I really want to thank you again for coming on.
Thank you, and I'm so sorry I was late.
Oh, we just missed about 5 minutes or so, but I really appreciate you coming, and I'm going to have you on sometime in the future.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bye.
And good night, everybody.